Hello, my name's Laura, and this is German Grammar Pod. This podcast is about how to use a paper German-English dictionary, because if you're learning a language, it's handy to be able to do this. Now, the problem with this is that different publishers include different information in their bilingual dictionaries in different ways. And I suspect that even over time, and within different brands, a single publisher will change how they present the information. If you're an advanced learner, you can probably cope with looking things up in the introduction to your particular dictionary. But if you're not an advanced learner, the introduction can be confusing and difficult to understand. So I'm going to try and help. If you've listened to my other podcasts, you should understand what I'm talking about in all of this podcast. However, if you're a beginner who's listening to this podcast before you've listened to most of my others, you'll probably find there are quite a few concepts in this podcast that you don't understand yet. When I get to those, don't worry about them. You can use a German-English dictionary without understanding all the fine details. If you do get as far as learning about the various different grammatical ideas, you can always come back and listen to this podcast again to find out how they relate to dictionary entries. Generally, a dictionary publisher will try and stuff as much information into as few characters as possible. This is great in terms of the amount of information per weight of paper that you have to lug around. If they didn't do that, you'd either have fewer translations or twice as much paper. However, when you first start learning a language, trying to cope with the way dictionaries compress information can be very confusing. So, what will you find in a standard entry? Well, the basics are that in each side of the dictionary, you'll find all the words the dictionary covers in one language, in alphabetical order. Collins calls these the head words. And each of these will be followed by at least one translation of that word into the other language, depending partly on how many possible translations there are of that word, and partly how thorough the dictionary is being. Sometimes, these multiple translations are just synonyms of each other. That's words that mean fundamentally the same thing. For instance, if you look up wunderbar in My Diddy Little Collins, it'll give you wonderful and marvellous. Wunderbar means either or both of those words, or pretty much any of the other synonyms of them you'll find in English. Other times, however, you'll find lots of translations that aren't synonyms of each other. This is because words in different languages often don't cover the same set of concepts as each other. You can either think of this as a right pain, or as one of those things that make languages interesting. This seems to happen particularly often in very common words. The one I'm going to choose as my first example of this is Himmel. In English, this can mean either sky or heaven. I like this example because it's particularly easy to see how German could have one word to cover what are usually considered two distinct concepts in English. The reason I think it's easy to see it is that we do still sometimes refer to the sky as the heavens, for instance in the sentence the heavens opened, which means it started raining hard, or in the sentence we stared up into the heavens, which means we stared up into the sky. Just like in English, you can tell from the context when heaven is being used to mean the sky, so German speakers can tell which one Himmel is being used to mean. This is a nice easy one for native English speakers, as whether you want to say heaven or sky, it's the same word in German. But what if you're not looking up a German word? What happens if you're in the other half of the dictionary, looking up an English word, and there's more than one translation? You could just as easily encounter either synonyms or two or more completely different words. My examples I'm going to use here are superb, canteen, and communist. Let's start with superb. If you look it up in My Little Collins, it gives you the translations ausgezeichnet and hervorragend. Now, I happen to know that these are synonyms of each other, but what if you didn't? Well, first of all, my Collins dictionary tends to include a word in brackets to signify a second meaning when there is one. So the fact that these words are only separated by a comma, with no explanatory word in brackets, means that there's a good chance that they mean the same thing. But if you want to be absolutely sure, what you should do is look these up in the other side of the dictionary. If you do that in My Little Collins, you'll see that ausgezeichnet and hervorragend both come out as excellent. This means you can use either of these words. The choice is yours. The fact that someone back-translating may well translate that word in your sentence back into English as excellent can't be helped. There is no one-for-one direct equivalence in areas like this with lots of very similar words. This doesn't change the fact that excellent and superb both probably have subtly different connotations to you, or that you'd prefer one word over the other, or only tend to use one in certain circumstances. All these things are true of the same set of synonyms in German for native German speakers. The problem is, they don't precisely match the subtle little differences behind the English words. The good thing is, though, that these differences are subtle. You can get away with any of these words in German. And better still, if you stay learning it long enough, eventually you'd start picking up those differences in German and hearing the word's own range of connotations in German. Right. Let's move on to the next one, canteen. If I say canteen, most of you probably think of a place at work or school where they serve food. In particular, I think of my school and university canteens, with their great big rectangular metal trays full of peas or curry or shepherd's pie. The thing is, this isn't the only meaning of canteen. There's also the small bottle of water used by soldiers or travellers. Or there's the British English-only meaning of a special box designed to contain a set of cutlery. If you look up canteen in My Little Collins, it gives all three of those meanings. In German, those are Kantine, Feldflasche and Besteckkasten. In my dictionary, Kantine, the one that means eating place, is the first one given. The next one comes after the words Brit of cutlery, enclosed in brackets. That's Besteckkasten, which is the canteen of cutlery meaning. The third one, Feldflasche, comes after the word bottle in brackets, and is the bottle meaning. Sometimes it can help to look the words up the other way round too, although with canteen in my pocket-sized dictionary, that's not such a helpful ploy, as only Kantine appears in the German side of the little dictionary. Actually, this is a good point at which to mention that with dictionaries, size matters. Although pocket ones are good for carrying around with you, they're not large enough to be practical for most uses, as they miss out a lot of really common and useful words, while fooling you into thinking that they're more comprehensive than they really are, by including some pretty obscure ones. For instance, although every Collins dictionary I've ever owned, including the Diddy Pocket Dictionary, includes the word isthmus, a word I can't recall ever needing to use, my pocket dictionary doesn't include the word croissant, a word I use a lot. I've also often found with small dictionaries that although they will include several translations of words I've needed to look up, it's not uncommon for them to have left out the one I actually need. So, if you're serious about language learning, you'll either need to buy a big dictionary or use the online ones. My favourite online German dictionary, dict.cc, currently contains over 750,000 translations, and it still doesn't have every word or phrase I need in it. So you can imagine how much the problem is compounded by a pocket-sized dictionary with only 70,000 or so translations. Sure, you may well use fewer than 70,000 words on a regular basis, but unfortunately you can't trust those words you use to be in a dictionary that size. And even if they are, you can't guarantee that the particular meaning in your sentence is included in the list of translations. Back to my examples. On my third example, communist, we have a different problem. And that problem is that communist can be either a noun or an adjective in English. A noun is a naming word, a name of a thing like hat, hairdresser, industry, or category. As a rule of thumb, nouns are words which you could put a the in front of. The hat, the hairdresser, the industry, the category, the communist. An adjective is a word that describes a noun. For instance, brief, exciting, elaborate, communist. For instance, a brief manifesto, an exciting manifesto, an elaborate manifesto, a communist manifesto. Because of how English works, you'll often find the same word falling into more than one grammatical category, like communist, which can be an adjective or a noun, or cool, which can be a noun or a verb. This doesn't happen as much in German, so it's important to know which one you're dealing with in English and pick the right word class in German. The first step is to work out which word you're after. When I was at school, I learnt a pretty useful poem about the nine parts of speech. There seem to be several versions of it around, but here's a version slightly adapted by me to better match up to modern definitions. A noun's the name of anything, a school or garden, hoop or swing. An adjective describes a noun, as great, small, pretty, white or brown. Instead of nouns, the pronouns sit, you, me, his, hers, this, that or it. Verbs tell of something being done, to read, write, count, sing, jump or run. An adverb tells how, where or when, as slowly, badly, there or then. Three little words you often see are articles, a, an and the. Conjunctions join the words together, as men and women, wind or weather. Prepositions link in nouns, as to or on or at the downs. The interjection shows surprise, as ah, how pretty, oh, how wise. The whole are called nine parts of speech, which reading, writing, speaking teach. I'll put this on my website, sites.google.com/site/GermanGrammarPod. Anyhow, once you've worked out which part of speech you're after, you need to work out which is which in the dictionary. In the communist entry, the noun form comes first. To show you you're dealing with a noun, my Collins shows an italic N immediately after the pronunciation guide. I'll come back to that later. After that, there's the German for the noun communist. An extra clue that we're looking at a noun in the German is that German always spells its nouns with a capital letter. Like we spell proper nouns with a capital letter, such as London or Laura or Royal Ballet, except that in German, this applies to any noun at all. The other thing that will tell you you're looking at a noun is that in the good German-English dictionary, particularly one aimed at native English speakers, your noun will be followed by M, F or NT to show its gender, masculine, feminine or neuter. This is because nouns have a grammatical rather than a natural gender in German. If you haven't heard about nouns having genders, you can find out more about that by listening to my podcast about gender. Most nouns will have a single M, F or NT after them. However, with communist, I've actually picked a slightly tricky example, because like most nouns that describe people in German, there's a male form and a female form of the word. Like in English, we have actor and actress, chairman and chairwoman, or emperor and empress. In German, the difference between a male and a female form is often that the female form will end in IN, much like feminine forms often end in ESS in English. However, unlike in English, there's no trend in German for getting rid of this distinction and finding a single gender-neutral form. Communist is just such a word where the female form of the word in German is the male form with IN on the end. The German for the male form is Kommunist, whereas the German for the female form is Kommunistin. In my Collins, they've chosen to show this by writing Kommunist with hyphen IN in brackets on the end. This is followed by M brackets F. This entry in the dictionary is intended to tell you that Kommunist is the German for communist, when the communist you're talking about is a man, or at least when you're not specifically referring to a woman. On the other hand, Kommunistin is the German for communist when the communist you're talking about is a woman. Just to make sure everybody's clear about this, Kommunistin isn't written with any brackets in it. The brackets were simply to show you both words without having to write both of them out in full. For most nouns, it's much simpler than that. most German nouns don't have a masculine and a feminine version. For instance, opera is just Oper, which is feminine. So all you see is Oper, F, to show you that it's a feminine noun. Back on communist, the other form of communist is the adjective. In my Collins, there's a little black diamond to show we're moving on to a different grammatical form. Then it writes adge in italics before writing kommunistisch, which is the German for the adjective communist. Dictionaries use a lot of these little abbreviations. A lot of them are self-explanatory, if you remember the parts of speech from that poem I gave you. For instance, in mine, N is the abbreviation for noun, ADJ is adjective, ADV is adverb, CONJ is conjunction, PRON is pronoun. If you're ever unsure of an abbreviation and you think it might be useful to know, you can look it up at the front of the dictionary. The only slightly tricky thing in all this is verbs. Instead of just using V for verb, my Collins has decided to tell you whether a verb is transitive or intransitive. If you're a beginner or an intermediate learner, the difference between transitive and intransitive verbs isn't important for you to understand or remember. I know this as I still have difficulty remembering what these two grammar terms mean, and I don't have a problem using German verbs because of it. Intransitive and transitive are simply words that describe two different ways that verbs are used that you probably already instinctively grasp. The difference between the two types is that transitive verbs can take a direct or accusative object. A direct object is the noun or pronoun that the verb is being done to. For instance, apple in I ate an apple. A lot of verbs can take a direct object in English, but quite a lot can't, and those are the intransitive verbs. For instance, to sleep. You can't say, I sleep the bed, or I sleep the fishes. In German, it gets a little more complicated than that, as in German, transitive verbs are specifically the ones that take an accusative object. Verbs that take dative or genitive objects instead count as intransitive. And, just to confuse things further, every now and again, a verb that takes a direct object in English translates into one that takes a dative or genitive object in German. So, for instance, to follow in English is a transitive verb, but folgen in German is an intransitive verb because it only takes a dative object. The important thing to remember here isn't whether folgen is transitive or intransitive, but specifically that it takes a dative object. If you look up either folgen or follow, my Collins is kind enough to tell you that folgen takes the dative by adding a little plus dat in italics after the verb. It might be a good idea to look up folgen in your own dictionary. If it mentions in any form that folgen takes the dative, you can be pretty sure that your dictionary will let you know in a similar manner if you're looking at a verb that takes either a dative or a genitive instead of an accusative object. The same also applies to prepositions, all of which in German dictate the case of the noun or pronoun which follows them. In a good dictionary, these will be followed by plus ack, plus dat, or plus gen to show which case they take. This can be where a paper dictionary has a real advantage over an online dictionary, as online dictionaries often prefer not to show which case a verb or preposition takes, or they do so in a manner which is hard for native English speakers to understand. Right, the next thing I wanted to mention was the form of the word you'll find in a dictionary. You'll find what is basically the simplest form of any word. For nouns, you'll find the singular form. For verbs, you'll find the infinitive. That's the basic form of the verb that hasn't been changed to match any person or tense. In German, infinitives of verbs end in en, whereas in English, we usually show an infinitive by putting a to in front of the verb. This to doesn't appear in dictionaries, though. They skip the to and just put the verb in. With adjectives, the adjective gets put in without any sort of ending on it at all. I'm planning to do my next podcast on adjectival endings, so you'll hear about them then. The fact that only the basic form of a word goes in a dictionary can be a bit problematic for beginners. When you first start learning a language, it can be really hard to work out what sort of word you're looking at and what its base form is likely to be. Google Translate solves this problem, so if you have access to a computer, go to Google, click Language Tools, and use the text field there to look up your word. But if you just have a paper dictionary with you, my best suggestion is to look up the start of the German word you're interested in and see if you can see any other words that start in the same way. The one exception to this is words that start with GE. These are often the past participle of a verb. To look these up, ignore the GE and look up the next bit. However, one word of warning. Some words in German do genuinely start with a GE in their basic form. So, if knocking the GE off doesn't work, try keeping it on. Another problem with dictionaries only having the basic form of each word in is that you can't look up conjugations of verbs. In other words, which form of the word you use with ich, which with du, etc. Some big dictionaries have tables of verbs at the start or at the back, which might help. But for beginners finding this a big problem, you're probably better off buying a book of verb conjugations. These have names like 301 German verbs. The other thing you can do is type the infinitive into Google with the word conjugation, or with your best guess at one of the conjugated forms. This will sometimes bring up a conjugation table. You're slightly better off with nouns. The two tricky things about nouns are their plural and their genitive form. Most German masculine and neuter nouns change when you put them in the genitive, mainly by adding an S or ES on the end. My Collins Dictionary has a table at the front showing the most common regular noun endings, together with their gender, genitive form, and plural. The one in my Collins contains only 32 different endings, and is actually a pretty useful thing to learn by heart if you're getting to that stage in your German learning where getting plural spot on is starting to become important. I survived for many years by adding en to any noun I couldn't remember a rule for to make the plural, which wasn't right in many cases, but was effective in making myself understood. The key things to remember are, if your dictionary doesn't show any endings for a noun, look for a table giving regular endings and see if you can find it there. If it does give endings in brackets after a noun, or dashes to show that the noun stays the same in the genitive and plural, the plural is the second of the two. Another thing I need to mention about dictionaries is that they tend not to write out all the words in full. Instead, they'll start with a word that's the shortest form of a set of words that all start the same way. After defining that, the dictionary will move on to any phrases it wants to define that include this word. The rest of the phrase will be written out, and the word in question will be represented by a tilde, that's a wavy hyphen. For instance, if you look up Folge in My Little Collins, you get four definitions of the word. After that, you get in Russia, tilde, where tilde stands in for the word Folge, and this is followed by the definition of that phrase, which is in quick succession. After a few more phrases in similar format, you get the next word with the stem Folge. Now, Folge on its own is a noun, and because nouns have capital letters in German, Folge is spelt with a capital F. The next word my dictionary includes in this section is Folgen. Folgen is a verb, and is therefore spelt with a lowercase, not a capital F. Unlike Folge, it also has an N on the end. To show that we've moved on to Folgen, which starts with a lowercase F and ends with an N on the end, my dictionary shows lowercase F, tilde, lowercase N. The F on the beginning is simply to show that the word starts with a lowercase F. Had the next word in this entry started with a capital F, or had my original word started with a lowercase F, the next entry would simply have started with a tilde. So, to sum that up, the tilde stands in for the head word. When there's a letter on the start of it, this shows that the word the tilde represents starts with a letter in the opposite case from the one the head word starts with. The letter on the front will be in the appropriate case for the word the dictionary's moved on to. When there are letters after the tilde, this shows any additional letters that the new word has on the end compared to the head word. The key things to take away from this are that if your word doesn't appear in your dictionary as the head word for an entry, for instance, you're looking for folgen, which you know to be an infinitive and therefore expect to find in that form in the dictionary, it's well worth checking through the rest of an entry for a head word that's the same as the start of the word you're interested in. The dictionary will only write the head word out in full once. After that, it will be represented by a tilde, which is a wiggly dash. A letter in front of a tilde simply shows whether this word should start with an upper or a lowercase letter, whereas letters after the tilde show additional letters that form the end of a new word. Finally, it's worth checking through large entries following a relevant head word for phrases that match the phrase the word you're looking up is being used in. This should give you a better translation than trying to translate each of the words of a phrase individually. To end with, I want to say a quick word about the pronunciation guide. In My Collins, this appears in square brackets after the head word. The pronunciation symbols you'll find in this are part of the International Phonetic Alphabet, which is an international system for showing pronunciation in symbols. It's easy enough to understand, as most of the consonants have the same letter symbol as they have in the English alphabet. And, on top of that, most good dictionaries have pronunciation keys as part of their introductions that give you an example of a word each sound appears in next to the pronunciation symbol. This is better laid out in some dictionaries than others. If you do want more information, it's worth looking up IPA for German in Wikipedia, which gives more information about how the symbols for the German words are pronounced. So, to sum up, when you look up a word, you'll often find more than one meaning listed. This can be for three reasons. Firstly, various synonyms could be listed there. Secondly, the word may be a word that can have more than one word class and needs separate translations for each in the other language. For instance, communist can be either a noun or an adjective in English, and German has separate words for each of these. Thirdly, a single word can have different meanings within one language, which require different words to translate them into the other language. You can often tell from the way the dictionary is set out what the case is for your word. But if you can't for any reason, it's well worth looking up the translations you find in the other side of the dictionary. The dictionary uses all sorts of abbreviations so it can fit more information in. A lot of them are fairly easy to guess, but you can always look them up at the beginning if you can't guess and it seems important. A good dictionary aimed at native English speakers will always give you any information you need on cases. To check if a dictionary you're considering purchasing does this, look up the verb folgen and the preposition mit. Both entries should include some form of indication that you need to use the dative with them. One final thing worth remembering is that when you see two endings or dashes representing no additional ending in brackets after a noun, the first of these is for the genitive singular and the second is for a plural. Well, that's it for German Grammar Pod this time. Next time I'm planning to talk about adjectives and adjectival endings. So, until then, goodbye and thanks for listening.